Well, I've tried to stay with your theme or purpose for the year in these lessons. And I'm going to close tonight with this part of we've been dealing with our relationship with one another. And really, when you think about the complement of each lesson toward one another, increasing our prayer life, improving our prayer life, improving the relationship between shepherds and the flock, and then our relationship with one another, they all are interwoven. Because as we pray for one another. And as we work together as a people of God, we interact with one another. And so tonight, I want to conclude with a lesson I've entitled The Fellowship of the Mat, M-A-T. And you will see why in just a bit. There's a true story. Five very good friends. They had spent their life together. They had played together. They had gone to school together, graduated together, had been in each other's weddings. But there was something different about one of them. There was something distinctly different about one. And the thing that was different was he couldn't walk. He was bound to a bed. And he was dependent upon his four friends. Every day, it was the same. It was the same routine. He'd wake up staring at the ceiling. Wake up waiting for somebody to come and attend to his personal needs. He was unable to do so. Really no great prospective future to be a husband. No prospective future to progress socially or to progress professionally. He had to be fed. He had to be clothed. Just everything about him was he was totally dependent upon others. There was no remedy. There's not going to be a cure. There's not going to be a pill. He is a man who is paralyzed. And he lies on a bed. If you'd like to turn with me to Mark chapter 2, we'll read about that man. Now, I did embellish that story a little bit. I don't know if they went to school together. I don't know if they were in each other's wedding or not. I don't know if they played together. But it does paint the picture of how close we're going to see these five men are. Beginning in verse 1 of Mark chapter 2. And again he entered Capernaum after some days, and it was heard that he was in the house. Immediately many gathered together, so there was no longer room to receive them, not even near the door. And he preached the word to them. Then they came to him bringing a paralytic who was carried by four men. And when they could not come near him because of the crowd, they uncovered the roof where he was. So when they had broken through, they let down the bed on which the paralytic was lying. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, "Son, your sins are forgiven you." And some of the scribes were sitting there and reasoning in their hearts, "Why does this man speak blasphemies like this? Who can forgive sins but God alone?" But immediately, when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they reasoned thus within themselves, he said to them, "Why do you reason about these things in your hearts? Which is easier to say to the paralytic, 'Your sins are forgiven you,' or to say, 'Arise and take up your bed and walk'? But that you may know that the Son of Man has power on earth to forgive sins," he said to the paralytic, "I say to you, arise, take up your bed, and go to your house." Immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went out in the presence of them all. So they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, "We never saw anything like this." This man had four friends, four faithful friends, four dependable friends, four loyal friends. He was totally dependent upon them for everything that he had. Aristotle said, "Of those who were infirm, let them soon be put to death." Roman law said that if there was one that was infirm, he was to be immediately put to death. In other words, this man was not going to be highly regarded because he was infirmed. And there was the idea in this day as well that if this happened to him, then he must have sinned. In John chapter 9, you have the man that's born blind. And the question is, who did sin? This man or his parents? And the answer is, well, neither one did. But this happened that God may be glorified. And Jesus healed him and enabled him to see, healed him of his blindness. As he begins to see and walk around seeing, people know this boy's blind. And now he's walking around with sight and they say, how did this happen? And his parents say, well, if you want to know, ask him, don't ask us. And so they go ask him and he said, well, if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. And finally he said, well, the Lord healed me. And that didn't sit well, but the thing was, what they did was they connected sin with the infirmity. If he had not had some sin, he would not have had the infirmity. That's exactly the argument that Job's friends made to him. You've done some great sin. And Job said, no, I'm blameless. He didn't mean by that he had never sinned. But what he's saying is, no, I have lived righteously before God. That's not the case. But the way people looked at it then is this man must have been guilty of some sin or he would not have been bound as a paralytic. We see something else, I think, that's significant in this. And we see something about the place and the power of Jesus. And the people miss that. But this man gets it. It says that they went up on a roof. Well, the way our houses are built today, that might be kind of a tricky sort of thing. I've got a two-story home, and I want to tell you, I don't want to be on the roof. It's got a steep pitch to it. But that wasn't this roof. These were flat roofs. And it was easy for these men to crawl up on these, to get a ladder and climb up on these roofs and break in. You remember David goes out while the army's out fighting, and he's on the roof as he beholds Bathsheba. The roofs were flat. They were able to be navigable. And here you have these four friends that go to the effort of climbing up on top of this roof to present their friend to Jesus. Why? Because the throng of the crowd was so great they could not edge in, they could not shoehorn in the front door because the people were pressing in so much. And yet they wanted Jesus to see this man. And they tear open that roof and they let the man down. And as he does, Jesus looks upward and sees the men. He looks down and he sees the paralytic. And he looks out and he sees the scribes and the Pharisees. He's looking up, he's looking down, and he's looking out and he sees all the people that are there. And he asked the question then, as they reasoned in their heart, which is it easier to do? To say, arise, take up thy bed and walk, or thy sins be forgiven thee? Well, it's much easier to say, thy sins be forgiven thee. Because if you say thy sins be forgiven thee, there's no existential evidence that's taking place. But if you tell a man to arise and take up his bed and walk, and you know that he's been a paralytic, he better arise, take up his bed and walk. And this man does. This man shows us the power of fellowship. The idea of fellowship looks at being partnered together. We have joined together, and these men are joined together for the good of their friend. They've sacrificed everything to this point for the good of their friend. And the idea of fellowship means that we have a joint participation one with another. And what that means is, along the way, there are going to be some people on their mats that we have to help carry. I wonder if we really appreciate the value of what God has arranged in what we call a local church. Many people say that, yes, they're part of a local church, but do they really understand the obligation? Do they really understand the value? That it's more than just simply having a name on a roll. Are they really willing to be partnered together? Well, there's four simple things I want you to see about this story and these men. The first thing that we see about this story and these men is that they accepted their friend as he was. They accepted their friend as he was. This man's a paralytic. He's going to be a paralytic. And they're going to have to accept him as he is. Now, there's something about helping people who are in need, and there's something about carrying people who are on their mats. It's okay to do that for a little while. But after a little while, why don't you take care of yourself? Why don't you do it yourself? You know, we've been doing this a long time. And why don't you take up that? And the other thing about it is that this man's problem was overt. Everybody knew this man's problem. But sometimes we have our own paralysis. But people don't know about the paralysis. It's our impatience. It's our anger. It's our hatred. It's our unjustness with others. And we have those kind of mats that we are paralyzed by. These four men are simply doing what Jesus has done. For example, you have John is in prison. Matthew tells the story in chapter 11 that John is in prison because he had the courage to speak to Herod and Herodias and tell Herod, you don't have a right to have that woman as your wife. Herod had some respect and fear of John and the people, but Herodias had no regard whatsoever for John, and hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, and she has been scorned. And she is going to arrange the way by which she can have John's head. And to tell you the kind of mother and woman that she is, she attired her daughter in salacious dress and then told her to go dance before these group of drunken men in a salacious way and seduced them. And Herod is so stimulated by that, he offers her anything that she wants to have for the kingdom. And she says, I'll take John's head on a platter. And John is in prison waiting to be put to death. And he sends two of his disciples to Jesus to say, are you the coming one or do we look for another? John is paralyzed. Here is John who is on the mat. And two disciples go to Jesus to say, are you the coming one or do we look for another? And he said, go tell John what you have heard and what you have seen. And then he tells them exactly what Isaiah would have said about the one that is the coming Messiah. And in doing so, he gives him empirical, irrefutable evidence, facts to say, yes, John, I am that one. In other words, he carries John. You think about Zacchaeus, that tax collector, that wee little man, I appreciate him a whole lot, that climbed up in that sycamore tree. I tell you what, if he had climbed up in that tree and fallen out and busted his head wide open, every Jew would have been thrilled to have seen that taking place, because here is this tax collector. And Jesus comes to him and says, Zacchaeus, come down from there. I'm going to your house today. And when he gets to Zacchaeus' house, who's with Zacchaeus in his house? Tax collectors. Sinners. And that poses a real problem for all those who are with Jesus. But do you see what Jesus is doing? He's carrying the mat with these people. Now, when we say accept people as they are, we're not talking about compromising with sin in any way. That's not what we're talking about here. No, you can only be right with God when you are in fellowship with God, whenever that sin has been forgiven. That's not what we're talking about here. If you're going to walk together and have agreement, then there has to be a commonality upon which we have this agreement. But the fact of the matter is, we're not all at the same place. We all are different places. I suspect it's true of this congregation that you are a great mixture of people from a mixture of places. I tell you, where we are at, there is a great mixture of people. There are people who have brilliance that runs out their ears. I would have nothing in common with those people were it not for Christ. When I went to school, I was in the Future Farmers of America. What that meant was I was in the back of the school. I wasn't in the front of the school where all the athletes and smart people were. We have some people that have some very high degrees. And then we have some people that, and when I say this, I'm not demeaning them, that are just tree trimmers. We have a very vast mixture of people. And then we have a vast mixture of people spiritually. We have babes in Christ. We have weak. We have strong. We have those that we need to warn. We're all at different places along the way. Every congregation is filled with people who are at different places in their spiritual development and in their life. We have families that are in different places. Some of us have grown kids, grandkids. Some are just newly married. Some just having kids. We're all at different places. And so we accept each other where we are. And we help carry each other. We help carry each other to Jesus. So Jesus can say, "Thy sins be forgiven thee." Now, here's our question. Who is it that's here on the mat? And who are the ones that are going to carry that person on the mat? You know, those guys didn't look down at that man and say, "You know, it's about time you carried your own load for a while. We're tired of carrying you." I get the thinking, the idea that they would not have dared thought about that. But how many times does our impatience run over with people in their struggles with life, and whether we say it or not, we look at them as though, "You know, it's about time you carried your share of the load here and did something different." But these men kept carrying their friend. The second thing I want you to see is these men carrying their friend on the mat did all they could to make their friend better. Now that sounds like I just contradicted myself. Because I said, first of all, we accept them as they are. But now then, these men did all they could to make their friend better. In the book of Galatians chapter 6, Galatians chapter 6, we're readily familiar, most of us, with verse 1, in which he says, "If a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone, not his own. For each one shall bear his own burden." In verse 2 he says, "You bear one another's burden." Then in verse 5 he says, "Bear your own burden." The way I describe that is this. When he says, verse 2, "Bear one another's burden," that's a burden with handles on it. And what that means is that burden has handles on it, and I need you to reach down and grab those handles and help me carry that burden. But when he says, "Let each one carry his own burden," that's the burden that I carry on my back in my backpack. That's the burden I carry around that is mine. Only I can carry that alone. But we have those burdens with handles on them where others can reach out and they can help us carry those burdens. Have you ever been a burden bearer? By the way, passing thought, that's what that word propitiation means. One who is a burden bearer. One who bears the burden away. Well, have you ever been that kind of burden bearer, grab the handles for others? Have you ever borne the burden for a teenager? Have you ever borne the burden for someone suffering loss? Have you ever borne the burden for someone that's just recently divorced? Have you ever borne the burden sitting across the table with someone who is crying their heart out, brokenhearted, because their mate has been unfaithful to them sexually? Or have you ever sat across the table from that one who has been sexually unfaithful and now is overwhelmed with guilt and cannot move past the guilt? Have you ever been the burden bearer of the person who's elderly? The person who needs help walking? The person who just needs simple care and attention? Have you ever been that kind of carrier of someone's burden? Have you ever carried the mat of those people with the purpose of making them better, helping them to be better? Do you have four friends that you could count on. That if you suffered any of those things we just mentioned, that you could call them and at a moment's notice, you know they would be there and they would not ask a question more. They would be there for you. One thing all need is approval, acceptance, affection, and affirmation. All people need those four things. And this man had received all of those from their friends. And when we help carry the mat for someone else, we are giving them acceptance, we're giving them approval, we're giving them affirmation, and we're giving them our affection. To help people be better, we not only take them where they are, accept them where they are, but we help move them to be better. And they brought this man to Jesus, and he became well. He got better. But the third thing about this man and his friends is the fellowship of the mat means you have to lay aside your own pride. You notice in the story that these men went up on the roof and they began to tear the roof open. Notice when it says in verse 4, "And when they could not come in near him because of the crowd, they uncovered the roof where he was. So when they had broken through, they let down the bed on which the paralytic was lying." These guys kind of remind me of children. You buy a new piece of furniture, you buy something new, and next thing you know, it's got a rip in it. You try to keep something nice and children play with it and tear it up. Well, here are these guys. They climb on the roof and they're tearing the roof up. And guess what's happening? Everybody below is getting all the debris. And these guys are they're tearing the roof up to let their friend down. And everybody else is being showered with all the dust, all the limbs, all the leaves that are there. They're tearing this roof up to give their friend to Jesus. They have to lay their own pride aside. They can't say, "We're too good to do that." They can't say, "You know, I'm just too good to help lift that. You need to get somebody else to help lift that burden. I'm just too good for that." No, these men, they weren't afraid to get dirty. And they weren't afraid of what others were going to say when they presented their friend to Jesus. These men had to swallow their pride to carry their friend and present him to Jesus like this. Do you have four friends who are humble enough, regardless of the trash and garbage that you have to work through to bring them to Jesus, and regardless of the inconvenience to themselves and to others, they'll reach down and help carry the mat and carry you to Jesus to help you be better? That's what these four men did. And then fourth and finally, with this carrying the mat, Jesus saw their faith. Did you notice when we read that? It says in verse 5, when Jesus saw their faith, these men haven't spoken. They've not said a word. Their actions have spoken loud. All they've done is they've simply presented their friend to Jesus in the only way they could possibly do so. And Jesus saw their faith. And these four friends saw something that everybody else, especially among those who were the scribes that were sitting there, missed. If this man is hopeless and there's no remedy for him, there's no medicine for him, there's no operation that's going to help him, they have heard that Jesus is in the house and word has spread like a wildfire that Jesus is healing people. And all they knew was one thing. We're going to take our friend to Jesus so he can perchance be healed if Jesus will see him. And when they couldn't press through the door, they did everything they could to make sure he was presented to Jesus. And all the scribes could say is this: why does this man speak blasphemies like this? Who can forgive sins but God? In other words, when Jesus says in verse 5, when he saw their face, sons, your sin are forgiven. They're saying, wait a minute, only God can do that. We know you. We know where you're from. You're the carpenter's son. We know you're from Nazareth. How is it that you're the carpenter's son from Nazareth and you're telling this man his sins are forgiven? Only God can do that. Everybody else got the point, but those folks missed it. And so Jesus then had to logically present it to them to say, why do you reason your hearts like this? Let me ask you this question, this imponderable question, this question that you've got to answer. Which is it easier to say? Thy sins be forgiven thee, arise, take up thy bed and walk. And they couldn't answer him. Because they knew to answer him would be to indict themselves. But what Jesus is saying is, yes, I am God. And you have missed who I am. But these four men didn't. And Jesus saw their faith. In Colossians chapter 2 and verse 2, it talks about being encouraged and knitting our hearts together in the bond of love. In this story, you can't help but see the bond of love these four men have for their friend. Do we have friends that have that kind of bond of love? The fact is, if you have any group of people together, you have people who have their own burdens. If you have a marriage, you have it. If you have a church, you have it. Anything where you have multiple people together, you need somebody that's going to be a roof crasher. Because we need to crash through a lot of roofs. We need to crash through the roof of busyness. We need to crash through the roof of fear. We need to crash through the roof of anxiety. We need to crash through the roof of discouragement. We need people to carry us to Jesus and crash through the roof for that. But I'll tell you what it takes. It takes time. It takes unmitigated time separated to be able to do that. So again, I ask this question. I'll reduce it this time. Do you have three people that it didn't matter what time of the night it was, that if the need was there, you could pick up the phone and you could call them and they would pick up that phone. They would not say, why did you wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning? Could you not wait until the morning? They would say, I'll be there in just a moment. Do you have three friends that if they dropped by at any moment to see you, you would not be embarrassed? You'd welcome them in because you know they're the kind of people that are going to help carry you on the mat. Now, that's what Barnabas did. But you can't carry people on the mat if you've got a beam sticking out of your eye. And so to be able to carry people on the mat, you've got to lay all that pride aside. You've got to be humble enough, and you've got to be willing enough to inconvenience yourself to go at whatever time, whatever need is, to be a servant to help them with what their paralysis is. That's what these men did. And I think I can say with great confidence, there's not a person living who at some point in their life does not need someone or someones to help them carry a mat. Help them lift up the burden with handles. Oh, that we all had four friends just like this. The story of a young man. He really was very intelligent. But his clothes were quite worn. In fact, the whole time he'd been in college, he had the same set of clothes, and it's like he never took them off. They had holes in them. They were tattered. His hair was long and stringy. And he came into church one Sunday. And when he came into church, he kept walking down to try to find a place to sit. And as he walked down to find a place to sit, he couldn't find a place to sit. So the preacher's up there preaching. He just sat down right in front of the preacher and crossed his legs Indian style. And as he's coming in, he looks that way, and people are saying, you can just see the eyes going back and forth like that. What's this guy think he's doing? Who is this guy? He comes down, sits down Indian style, and looks up at the preacher. And just a little bit, Bill, the deacon, gets up. He's about 80 years old. He walks with a cane. Everything fits. Everything's in its place. His hair is in its place. Everything with his suit matches. His coat is buttoned. Everything is crisp. And Bill ambles down the aisle to the man, and people are just thinking, we know what's about to happen. But what happens is that Bill comes up there, lays his cane down, and sits down beside the man, Indian style. And the preacher paused. And he said, folks, the lesson you have just seen, you will remember far longer than the lesson you have just heard. One other question. It says at the end of this story, immediately he arose and took up the bed and went out in the presence of them all. Who do you think he went looking for? Who do you think he went first looking for? The man who came down and sat down right beside him. The man who carried him on top of the roof. He went looking for those four friends. Because now he's been restored and he can be one just like them. Will we be like Bill the deacon? Will we be like these four men? Will we pick up the mat and help others and carry them? That's what the relationship is about when we talk about fellowship. When we call each other brothers and sisters. Those are terms that speak of family. Those are terms that speak of endearment, that speak of closeness, that speak of affection. And because we have that kind of love, we reach down and we pick up the mat and we take them to Jesus, because Jesus can heal them. Jesus can heal any of us tonight. And if there's a need that you have that we can help present you to Him, we invite you to come while we stand and while we sing.